This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs. Well, greetings once again to everybody out there at TFMR. It is Labor Day weekend here in the U.S., the unofficial, official end of summer. Falls on a Monday, so that means we are set upon the course of a three-day market holiday weekend. And if you've been around TFMR for a while, you know what that means. A three-day market holiday weekend means it's time to check in with our old buddy, the Golden Jackass, Jim Willie himself. You know him as the editor of the Hat Trick Letter, which can be found at his website, goldenjackass.com. We've been doing this now for, I think, 7 years, maybe eight. And let's do it again. Jim, my man, thank you for joining us once again.
Good to be on. And, you know, the summer's almost over. In Costa Rica here, we have a summer that begins in January. The summer here is glorious, January, February, March, and part of April. I mean, like 75, 80 degrees, mild breeze, sunny, three straight months. Okay, but in the United States, we're ending the summer, and I'm glad of it because it means the beginning of football season.
Exactly.
And I think tomorrow or maybe even tonight, there's some college football, and I'm jazzed. I got to tell you, I'm enjoying it. I'm curious to see if my Patriots can get back and remain competitive with some mild problems. And, you know, the trade of Jimmy Garoppolo resulted in two big picks, and they're both turning out to be nothings. One guy got injured, and the other one is not panning out. It's just fun. Football season is fun. I'm glad it's upon us. And first is college. I wish the pros would start a week earlier because they go into January, for God's sake, when there's snow in Green Bay. It's ridiculous.
Right.
And in New England. It's cold in New England in January.
And I'm not even going to mention Urban Meyer and your Ohio State Buckeyes. We'll just kind of go forward from there because I don't want to get you started.
Well, he got his hand slapped, and we'll move on. I hope it's not too much of a distraction. But the big distraction right now, soon for the American public, is going to be the fate of the dollar. And I don't think it's on more than 5% of Americans' radar.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's certainly not on my brother, not on my sister, not on my father with his inheritance, not at all. I talk to various people, and they have no concept. What I am noticing, this is ugly. I'm noticing this with about three different friends. They're all having certain business and financial problems, and it's getting hairy, ugly, hairy, and one guy had a his business supplier just completely fell out.
Yep.
One guy had a contract, a legal contract for home constructions, all falsified by some old lady idiot who wants to extort some money. Everybody that I know of is having some problems, and I think it has to do with just the entire atmosphere of a vicious recession, problems for being in the seventh year of QE with funny money going everywhere, economic damage, money supply going to the roof while money velocity goes through the floor, slowing down. Businesses are being harmed. And I'm hearing these scattered stories of big spurts of business activities, like, for instance, truck rig orders, big truck rig orders, like, you know, the 18-wheelers, 16-wheelers, all the big guys. The orders are really ramping up, and there's stories about how the repatriation of several hundred billion successfully has resulted in some investment. And I like to say, well, you know, 10 to 20 times that amount is going into stock options, executive compensation, stock buybacks, and really inferior type channels for growing the economy. We're in a climax phase here, and Trump is doing his dead level best to repatriate money to force some investment, but in my opinion, he's doing a very good job. He opened the gates, but he's not controlling the destinations of where the money's going. It's still predominantly going into stock buybacks.
Yeah.
Now, we're starting to see a stall of that, while the rest of the world is basically ramping up, entering a higher gear of rejecting the dollar. Would you say that that's a big trend right now?
Yeah, and that's where I think we should focus our attention, at least here on Labor Day of 2018, because recently in the last, whatever it was, back in April and May, the dollar shot forward about 6 or 7% in 6 weeks. The ripple effect of that now is starting this contagion in the emerging markets, and we'll get to that in a minute. But you and I have discussed this idea of de-dollarization and the dollar status as reserve currency. I mean, as long as we've been doing this for the last 7 or 8 years. And, you know, you mentioned nobody, you know, your brother, your father, nobody even, and you said 5% of the people are aware of this risk. I don't even think it's that, Jim. I think most folks suffer from an extreme level of cognitive dissonance with this because their entire life, the only world they've known is dollar supremacy, the dollar reserve system, king dollar, all that kind of stuff. So they don't have like a frame of reference to say, oh, it could go back to something else or it could, you know, go in a different direction. They just only know what they've experienced. And this idea of reserve currency status and the exorbitant privilege of it is something that is transitory. And so you and I have talked about this. We've talked about how other countries would desire to at least compete with the dollar for that status, and the Eurasian Alliance and the One Belt, One Road Project and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and the Asia Infrastructure Investment Bank and everything that goes with it. And it's a gradual process. But anyway, for the purpose of this discussion, what I've noticed, and I'm sure you have too, is maybe an increase in the velocity of this discussion in the last couple of months, because suddenly, and whether people agree with it or not, the Trump administration seems to be dramatically increasing the use of the dollar and the dollar system as a weapon to enforce sanctions, to enforce tariffs, to try to get their way and flex their muscle worldwide. They're using the dollar. I mean, we were granted this privilege of having a dollar as the reserve currency to help the world rebuild after World War II. And now we're using it against the world to enforce our kind of hegemonic ways. And so anyway, Jim, I've rambled now here for a while.
Let's just focus on to enforce what? You said hegemonic way.
Yeah.
Okay, that's general. Let's focus on what we're enforcing. What are we trying to preserve?
What are we
trying to keep in place?
Go for it.
And I got a very strong opinion of what we're trying to keep in place. We're trying to keep in place a deeply fraudulent monetary system with privileges to the U.S. economy and to the bankers for self-dealing, and to the arms dealers who rely on the funny money funding for weapon systems.
Yep.
Okay, so what are the beneficiary areas? The U.S. economy generally, because how are we paying for finished goods and services? Well, we're paying them with treasury bonds. We're paying with fraudulent, toxic bonds that are on the verge of default, that are being supported by derivative machinery, where auctions are unattended by foreigners. Okay, we're supporting the economy, what I call a deadbeat economy, a freeloader economy. I just looked up the word freeloader because I use it in Spanish. It's garrón. Okay, we are a nation of garrones. We don't pay our freight. We import lots of stuff from China. And now you mentioned that Trump is acting in a hostile way regarding trade partners, you know, big reference to that. I think he's got an ulterior motive that he does not talk about. I think he wants to cut back on our trade, and he's being hostile with the vendors because he's trying to make the vendors into villains. He's criticized the Germans for having a trade surplus. How insane is that? Okay, you don't criticize the Germans for exporting. You criticize Detroit and the auto workers for offshoring You criticize the U.S. technology sector across the board for having Asian and Pacific Rim offshoring. Let's bring back the industry. Okay, that's one area. The U.S. economy is freeloading, paying their bills with funny money treasuries. Okay, what's the other beneficiary? Wall Street banks. They're involved in, you know, the bond trade, the bond carry trade. I was amazed. In 2003, I visited Kurt Rickenbacker, actually in German it's Rickenbacher, but we call him Rickenbacker. And I just happened to bring up the yen carry trade. And he said to me, "What are you referring to?" And I said, "Well, you know, the yen carry trade, you know, arbitraging interest rates from Japan and the currency in the United States." He said, "What do you mean?" I thought he was joking.
Right.
The carry trade in bonds is not a well-known concept, even for financial professionals. Wall Street takes the near 0%. They borrow against it or short it, and they go long on the 10-year bond. And they pocket the difference. And that's why the interest rates went down, down, down on the 10-year ever since 2011 and 12. It started at about 3%, 2.7, and worked its way all the way down to 1.5, which was a forecast of mine. It got, I think, very close to a 1%, and it kind of bounced off it like a nasty oppositional type magnet. But Wall Street does the carry trade. And with the differential, they make big money. And with futures contracts, they multiply it by 30. They're doubling their money in a single year on the bond carry trade. Okay, that's a big benefit for the funny money. What else is a benefit? The arms makers. Gosh, Trump showed his cards. I mean, I'm a fan of Trump when it comes to, you know, cleaning up the extortion and the sex rings and all that. Let's not get into it. I'm a big fan of Trump in the usage of the omnibus bill. And it's called omnibus because it covers a wide range of criminal activity. It's like a huge RICO law. And we're going to seize assets from criminals
some of the funny money.
Extortion and sex rings and you name it. Just make something. Military contract fraud. You name it. They're going to seize money. They're going to arrest. They're going to hang some. Who knows? Maybe they've already hanged a couple. Okay. And what else is a beneficiary? Well, this is going to sound really weird, but smaller nations that are on the margin will be looking for handouts or bribes and continue with dollar. Brazil was wavering. United States could say, "Well, we're going to just grant you $20 billion,
right?
And we ask for your loyalty to the dollar." Mm-hmm. Where does the $20 billion come from? It comes from nowhere. It comes from vapor. Okay, what is the other beneficiary? The owners of the U.S. Federal Reserve, the owners, the board members. Now, Ron Paul, back in, I think it was early months of 2009, following Lehman, had a big controversial bill. He wanted to audit the Fed, and they did some compromises. Well, they did an audit. It was kind of a summary, cursory type audit. But in the course of the audit, they revealed that there were $23 trillion of near 0% loans to the owners of the Fed. And if my fellow American citizens think that's going to be paid back, then I think you've got three eyes and no brain. Okay, so there are lots of beneficiaries. And to be sure, it's not just funny money that would be given to Brazil or Ecuador. It would be narco money because they'd be employed and hired and, what's the word, attracted into the narco money laundering schemes from South America by way of Central America to the United States. And what better way to do that than to have a military coup 4 years ago in Honduras, which is not very far from Costa Rica. I've only been there once, and I'm telling you, it's a mess. It's a mess, and when I got out of there, I said, I don't think I want to go back.
So hold on.
Then I came to learn, huh?
No, Jim, I'm sorry. I want to kind of
drag you back to where I was going, though. And not that you're not going there, but if the U.S. can buy influence, you know, I mean, we buy influence with the Saudis to keep the petrodollar going, right, by doing their bidding anytime they want us to militarily. But can the U.S. buy that same influence to keep these One Belt Road, One Road nations in check? And I say that because if you connect the countries on a map that are being actively sanctioned in tariff, it runs east to west from China to Pakistan to Iran to Turkey and then up to Moscow. And you even mentioned Berlin. What he said against Berlin? I mean, that's Berlin was where the Eurasian Alliance began. So if the U.S. can do what you've been describing to keep a Honduras in line, can they do that kind of thing with Indonesia? Can they do that kind of thing with Turkey?
I don't think so. Now, Indonesia is a different story. Let's just stick with the other ones. Iran, Turkey, that's what I call the southern edge of the Eurasian trade zone. Okay? Look at all for coffee and gold. I know. I'm sorry. They could be a big provider trade zone of coffee and gold. I'm not sure. Maybe some agricultural output, but I think they're net buyers. I'm not sure. I think they're net importers of food. Okay. They could also provide the Eurasian trade zone with great deals for hotels on the Mediterranean. I'm not joking.
Oh, I know.
What does Turkey offer? I mean, tourism, coffee, gold. I don't know what else. Okay. They're in trouble. Okay. So what other nation? Iran on the southern edge. They're already with big import-export provisions, barter trade with China. They're already there. They've already cut deals with Russian Rosneft to sell Russia oil. Why on earth? Okay, I mention this every single interview. Russia's the number one producer of oil. Why are they buying oil from Iran? Easy. To advance the non-oil trade and to assist Iran in liquidity provision. And it's a brilliant stroke, and you're seeing Iran now signing big deals with India, big deals with Pakistan. I think it's called, oh gosh, yesterday I had the name at the tip of my tongue. There's a port facility in Iran that's only about 100 miles from the Persian Gulf, Straits of Hormuz. And they're developing it. And they're developing a railway to go north-south in Iran to connect up with Turkey and points north. Iran is going to be a major cornerstone of the Eurasian trade zone. All these sanctions to the marginal nations of Asia, like West Asia, they're all impetus events to accelerate their integration into the Eurasian trade zone.
Precisely.
And all the actions done with India, for instance, that's another connecting site. Yep. Between Iran and Eurasia. It's India. All the pressure, like say, monetizing temple gold.
Right.
Eliminating the highest currency, rupee.
Right.
For India. Clamping down on smugglers. It's all with a backfire to make India look east for better treatment in trade and commerce. Everything that England does with India is going to eventually boomerang and backfire. Everything the United States does backfires immediately because it is so dumb. It is so arrogant and it is so aggressive.
So, Jim, if
the British
this is
are more clever,
if all of this is, like I said, turning up the volume, turning up the speed, again, not that like all of this is going to happen overnight, you know, or by next Tuesday, but if the speed of this change, the speed of this foundation that is being laid, if the speed of the movement away from the dollar is moved up from a speed of one up to two over the last several months. And it's clear that this is where eventually the world is headed. What does it look like? I mean, when it gets here, you know, the day that that there is an alternative, even if it's a regional alternative. Boil that down. You can do this better than anybody. What does that mean to the average American, the average Canadian, the average European that's listening to this?
What it means is the U.S. economy is going to get isolated. It means one by one, countries are going to work either through sanctions and that obstacle, or a simple rejection saying, we don't want treasuries for all our Pakistani and Sri Lanka clothing. Okay, just a simple example. We don't want treasury bonds. We're trying to get rid of them. We don't want any more. Right. We want a better form of for exports to the United States. And before you know it, they're going to say, ah, you know what? It's just not worth the trouble dealing with the United States anymore. We're going to send our Pakistani clothing to South America because we got some good Chilean and Ecuadorian and Colombian buyers. And, you know, it just goes and grabs momentum. Okay, you said we've gone in the last few months from one to two in gear speed. I would say that if a year ago we were at one, right now we're at four.
Okay.
We're picking up speed a lot. And all you have to do is look at the volume of the One Belt, One Road, which is also called the Belt and Road Initiative. It's also called the New Silk Road Project. It's got a lot of names, but OBOR for One Belt, One Road, BRI for Belt Road Initiative. I like BRI. I like Belt Road Initiative because that's what I hear the most, read the most. If you look, you'll see that they've got maybe a couple hundred billion dollars worth of projects underway. I mean, like funding guaranteed, construction contracts lined up, everything, and they're making progress. They're breaking ground and actually doing something out there, like build a bridge or build a port or, you know, build a railway. Okay, it's got some volume, whereas a year ago it was very, very small volume. Mm-hmm. Now you got one after the other. I just saw a contract signed between China and a I don't know what country it was. It could have been Denmark, could have been Netherlands, could have been Germany, but I don't think it was Germany. It was for air freight. And they were saying that the Belt and Road has gone into an airlift. Okay? This connectivity between China and Europe is not just going to be by highways and railways. It's going to have an air element, air freight. And it's going to expand the volume tremendously. You cannot stop it. The actions by the United States are forcing acceleration. The Asians and the Eastern Hemisphere are coming to a conclusion. We must hasten and accelerate our developments. We must increase the RMB-based trade payments. We must increase the volume of the CIPS, alternative to SWIFT, bank-to-bank transactions. Germany came out and said, we've already got an alternative to SWIFT. We've already been using it with Iran, and we're going to continue to use it and increase the use peer-to-peer between Germany and Iran, bypassing the dollar, increase the volume, and we'll be fine for the companies that want to violate the U.S. Fascist sanctions. I mean, since when does the United States have jurisdiction over Iranian trade with Germany?
Right.
I asked a question 3 years ago, 4 years ago. When does the United States, since when does the United States have jurisdiction over Swiss banking with UBS? You know, just a quick sideline. That wasn't really the motive. The motive was to get their mitts in there, get keys to the bullion banks and steal Arab gold, which was the primary motive. Okay, so there's a lot of crap going on, a lot of nasty, dirty business robberies, pilferage. The U.S. government's acting more like a criminal organization and mafia than they are a government in service to its people. It's acting predatory. Sorry, that was just an update on my Skype. For instance, in the United States, the amount of roadside police confiscations of cash has now exceeded home robberies. I mean, that's a startling statistic.
Yeah.
Okay, you're going to have lots of events, and I think some of the big events coming up. Okay, here are two. I think Turkey has become now forced into a new role. They're basically Putin and Russia's boy. And I mean that with a bit of condescension, but also an element of devoted service. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Let me know what you need and we will do it post haste. Mm-hmm. That's what I think Erdogan is replying to Putin. And I think Putin is saying to him, get your gold platform, your gold trading platform, get it up to speed, get its inner workings, because we're going to need it for the Eurasian trade zone. We're going to need it for a lot of different things in say, sovereign bond conversion of treasuries and euro bonds to gold for the banks in the Eurasian trade zone. I'm talking about 30 countries. And not just that. Big event coming up, the gold trade note. I think China is going to announce it in the next few months. It could be 2 months, could be 4 months. I don't think it's going to be next Tuesday, but it could be in October. I don't know. A lot of things seem to be pointing to October. The gold trade note will be a device, a financial instrument, where people, where participants, buyers, can post a margin of gold and have payment guaranteed in gold, say, for a gold shipment, a tanker, or a grain shipment, a big boat, or a big contract for service provision that lasts for 8 months or a year. Post an amount of gold as margin and guarantee the rest of it paid in gold at the end of the contract, which can be rolled over into another and which can be netted out with trade in the other direction. So net gold settlement on trade bilaterally. Okay, that I think is coming. And it's going to be very important, I think, for Arab and African oil sales. I include Africa because OPEC is now pretty much defunct. They might have a meeting in Vienna. They might have some, you know, agreements that aren't honored. Now you're seeing a new trend in OPEC, which is largely disbanded, but they still meet. They don't have any unity.
Right.
The new trend is that the Saudis are the only ones honoring the deal. In the past, the Saudis were the ones who did not honor the deal. But I include Africa for a very important reason. Algeria, Nigeria, and Angola are big oil producers that used to be or still are in OPEC. And now I think you're going to see their oil trade really ramp up with RMB Chinese currency payments. The Chinese did something very clever, Craig. A year ago, they did a credit foreign aid package with Angola in the form of treasury bonds. And this was no small amount. Might have been a few billion. And in the terms of the deal, they would sell their oil, take RMB, and repay the loan to China in RMB. So the converting office for Chinese-held U.S. treasuries is Angola's oil business. That is clever. And the voice told me 8 months ago that the Africans are using an extremely clever method The Chinese are using an extremely clever method in Africa to dump their treasuries. And I said, can you give me details? He said, you figure it out. So I did.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, the other big issue coming up is the Saudis are being arm twisted in a very big way. I think it's more like a headlock. Now, if you've ever been in a headlock, you remember that, that really hurts my neck, but I'm having trouble breathing. Okay, mm-hmm. That's the kind of pressure I think China is applying to the Saudis to accept RMB and oil payments. And when I last conversed with The Voice a couple weeks ago, he said, It is already happening now. They just are afraid to openly admit it, publicize it, and put it in the news.
Sure.
And I said, you mean because of retribution from Langley and ISIS and terrorist elements? And he said, yeah, of course, the usual.
Yeah.
Okay. So all this action by Washington with trade sanctions and bully tactics and bribery to force compliance with the dollar and continuation with the dollar, it's forcing polarization, us versus them.
Mm-hmm.
And Putin recently made a statement calling the United States a dictatorship, fascist-type organization. He said, look, the United States makes unilateral decisions that affect their foreign allies and then tells them, you must comply and go along with us hand in hand. You're either with us or against us. He said, that's not how democratic activity takes place among alliances of nations.
Yep.
And Putin's dead right.
No, absolutely.
We were breaking away from the European agreement on the Iranian nuclear deal. And, you know, of course, it has a lot of very scummy elements like Obama's narcotics trade and bribes paid to the cabal leaders of a few nations in the European Union. Trump objects to both. That's why he called it a very scummy deal that he was going to sandbag. And he did. But there are consequences. Now, the Germans are looking to make better ties with Iran and increase their ties with Russia, defiant on the Nord Stream 2 project. And even the EU Commission, their court, sided with Germany on the Nord Stream 2 project. Craig, we're losing Germany.
Right, right. Well, and Jim, this is all part of this process where the speed is being turned up. That's just undeniable, and it's getting turned up more and more. It seems like almost on a weekly basis now. But what's kind of, I don't know, it's not necessarily ironic, but what's interesting is at the same time in the short term, the value of the dollar, at least as measured, you know, in that basket of the dollar index, has been rising. And that, as we mentioned earlier, is putting this extreme pressure on these emerging market nations. Some of them are the ones that are sanctioned, right? Turkey, Iran, you know, you just go down the list. These emerging market nations are heavily dollar indebted. And when the dollar goes up, it increases the service costs for that debt, which makes them need more dollars, which then causes the dollar to go up even higher. And it's this cycle. The last time this happened was in 2015, after the big dollar run-up in 2014, and it ended up being a little mini stock market crash in August of that year.
Like to think of 1995, the Asian meltdown.
Well, you can look at that, too. Market. Yeah, no, that's true. Or 98 even. But Jim, here's what I'm wondering
about.
We're
going to have it again. It's going to repeat, Craig.
Well, and so here's what I wonder about. And then maybe this is just out there and too big a picture. But couldn't there be, you know, if defaults by these emerging markets is what they're worried about, you know, the Argentinian 100-year bond, which is a joke anyway, is now trading at 70, you know, and there's Italian bonds that are in trouble. And you know, all of this contagion is out there. What if all of a sudden some of these debtor nations, the ones in Africa, like you mentioned, say, you know what, screw it, fondue. We're going to default on these bonds. And we're not going to, and the reason we're going to do it is because we're not going to play in your system anymore, U.S. You can then try to sanction us and penalize us, but we're just going to start over. You know, here's your bonds. We're not paying them, just like giving away the keys to the house, to the, you know, to the bank, right? We're, whatever. You can do whatever you want to me, but here's your keys back. I'm moving on. What if that facilitates and speeds up things? Because all of a sudden, these nations then turn to this new system and say, I want to start over with a clean sheet using your system instead of the dollar system. I mean, anyway, tie that all back together for me, would you, regarding emerging markets and the dollar and how this kind of fits into the process too?
This is a very big topic.
Yeah, I know. I gave you a full plate there to chew on.
Yeah, and we don't have a lot of time left, but let me do my best. Okay. Back when we made 0% the standard, which we said we would never do 20 years ago,
uh-huh.
We said that Japan made a big mistake and they're stuck. Well, that was a lie because Wall Street set it up to make the yen carry trade and produce $1 trillion of profit per year. Well, not per year, but, you know.
No, I got you.
You get the point. Okay. When we made the 0% standard, we started to sell our credit to the emerging market nations. We would say, for instance, to Pakistan, borrow $1 billion. I mean, what could go wrong? Well, something could go wrong very easily. Their currency could fall. A 20% decline in the Pakistani currency is equivalent to a 20% increase in the interest rate. It is that simple in the math. Okay, you have numerous emerging market nations with 15, 20, 25, and 30% currency declines.
Yep.
Now, when I talk to people who aren't very well schooled in finance, I tell them that the United States has 0% money and we're printing a lot of it, but we're using it to buy our bonds. And that demand for the bond improves the valuation of the dollar relative to the other countries who cannot print money to cover their bonds.
Yep.
So our printing of free money with QE since 2011 and 12 has lifted the dollar and destroyed the other currencies. For instance, in this neck of the woods, there's a country that has suffered pretty mightily, and it's the Dominican Republic. And I've got a couple of lady friends from Dominicana, and they all tell me the same story. 30% decline in the Dominican peso. 30. Big impact on food imports and energy imports, gasoline and food, the basics.
Right.
Okay. So we maintain in the U.S. the high dollar from printed money, which would never be permitted in the gold standard. These emerging market nations are suffering enormous difficulties with their credit and their loan portfolio management. Two things are going to happen. Before I get to that, I featured in 2017, early in the year, and 2016, late in the year. I was saying we're going to see an emerging market meltdown over credit because their currencies have fallen so much. They're having tremendous problems in loan servicing for big portfolios, and combined, the emerging market is over $5 trillion in loans. It's all at risk. And then I'd read, well, no, it's not five, it's more like $8 trillion. I say, well, you know, the problem here is how do you define an emerging market nation? Okay, make a list of them and add up all their debts, and it's between five and eight, depending on who you include in the list. $5 and $8 trillion. All these nations have suffered 15, 20, 30% declines in their currency. What enables them to continue to service their debt? And I came up with a very surprising answer. Western banks were lending them money to cover their interest.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so the Western banks were facilitating the rollovers. One of two things is going to happen, Craig, and I think it's going to happen real soon. The countries are going to say, we don't want to borrow anymore to cover the interest payments. We want to just default. Because we've got better friends in the East.
There you go.
Who treat us better, who offer us better loan terms, who don't include with the big credit provision required requisite arms deals like you Americans do,
mm-hmm.
and like you British do, and like you Germans and French do. So we're going to voluntarily default and put a hot poker up your rectum. And they're going to turn to the Eurasian trade zone with, as you called it, cleaner slates and start anew with big projects, you know, construction. You know, you can call it infrastructure. It's an overused word, but they're basically large construction projects that result in an enormous upspring of new businesses, job hiring, economic development, the opposite of what the United States preaches, which is arms and destruction of bridges and terrorist hideouts.
And Jim, just to put this in another set of terms for people to get their arms around this,
You know, it's like if you walk into the Apple store and try to steal a computer, they're going to run you down. But when you see the news of the mob attacking the Apple store, I mean, the robbery works. And so, you know, if one country defaults, the U.S. is going to enforce, you know, these punitive policies and, you know, rain hell on them, even militarily. But if a whole bunch of them do it at once or in succession, that's how the system changes. So anyway, go ahead.
I've got a theory, Craig, and it's real simple. The last 2 years, we've been using hidden QE to make grants and extended loans to emerging market nations to prevent their defaults.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this tightening trend is going to have some consequences to tighten on the loan provision, the additional marginal loan provision to the emerging market nations, while at the same time, they're going to be getting offers from China to take loans of treasury bonds. China's got to dump $1 trillion. It's right at 1.0.
Right.
And I believe that maybe 20% of that is committed. What I'm saying is 200 billion of their trillion, 200 billion in Chinese held U.S. treasuries has been committed for projects. And the projects are to draw countries away from the dollar system, to draw them into constructive projects to build up their economy as opposed to more arms deals. They're seeing an opportunity and a wide open door, these emerging market nations, to get away from the Western debt slavery, which is the hallmark of the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank. China's offering them construction projects, offering them aid, and it's all based in treasury bonds. It's called indirect exchange. Mm-hmm. They're spending treasury bonds with a party that is not the United States. And then that party dumps them on the market, spends them in whatever way, and before you know it, they're converted to RMB like through Angolan oil sales. It is brilliant, but it's going to be repeated on the Belt and Road Initiative. We've got hundreds of projects involving dozens of countries. Not a shred of it is going to be dollar-based in the commerce, but my full expectation is that a big swath of it is going to be funded by treasury bonds, a dumping on the market. And the United States and the Fed, they're going to be forced to react. And I got to squeeze something in here because I forgot to mention it earlier.
Do it.
Pardon me. Something happened a week ago. The Rothschilds attempted to dump 40-something trillion, like 45 trillion in Deutsche Bank derivatives. They tried to dump it on the Federal Reserve.
Really?
And Trump blocked it because Trump has a plan to, I don't know what the right word is, confiscate, rescue, bring to heel the Federal Reserve. This is very big, high-level financial war. The Rothschilds attempted to dump garbage, toxic paper in the form of derivatives, over 40 trillion of it, on the Federal Reserve, and it was blocked. Now, at the same time, the Fed is holding the bag of $4 trillion of dollar-based, you know, treasury bonds, mortgage bond, Fannie Mae bond. It's all dollar-based, rotten paper, impaired, toxic, that deserves not even B value.
Right.
There are almost no buyers of treasury bonds. It's all machinery and Wall Street doing their carry trade, earning nice 2% VIG, multiply it by 30, which would be 60% on a 2% VIG. Okay. There's a war going on, and now the war is between Deutsche Bank and New York City. This is big. This is very big.
Yeah.
This is a turning point. This is a point where Trump is about to announce potentially 4 new board members to the Fed, and they're all going to be friendly to the U.S. nation for constructive credit usage as opposed to Wall Street welfare.
Jim,
very big.
How does that fit into this picture, though? I mean, is that just a preparation for the next system so that the Fed's not, you know, involved and the bankers aren't as involved, and because Trump knows what's coming next. But at the same time, it seems like Trump is part of the problem in, let's call it weaponizing, or the increased weaponization of the dollar and SWIFT and everything else. I mean, how do you square those two?
Okay, I square that in a very simple explanation that's easy to state and hard to swallow. Trump is doing everything he can to accelerate the movement away from the dollar globally. Trump is alienating the Germans, mm-hmm. and forcing them to ignore the sanctions and to build up the commerce bilaterally, Russia and Germany. They've already got numerous big German companies are making subsidiaries. It's a done deal. They already have output. They've got a couple of years of output in Russia, German companies. Okay, that's a workaround. They didn't plan on that in Washington because fascists don't have good foreign policy. They have arrogant, bellicose, pressured foreign policy that all backfires. Okay, Trump is doing everything conceivable to reduce U.S. trade in dollars. He ruined a big grain deal, soybeans with China. Another one, wheat with China. They're both wrecked. You got soybean ships that are circling around in the sea of China, and they can't unload. They're rotting. They're rotting. The biggest victim in this trade war in the United States has been soybean farmers and grain farmers in the United States. The suicide rate is skyrocketing. The foreclosures and bankruptcies are skyrocketing. Okay, so this is a backfire. Just put aside all the misery and just look at the end result. Less dollar trade.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be Trump's objective by whatever means, including what seems to be dumbass trade sanctions. This is very complicated. China is now developing more ties with both Korea and Japan for trade. China is expanding their entire Pacific Rim trade. They're building up their own internal domestic demand. They're working up more trade with Thailand. They're working up more trade with Mongolia. They're making more trade with Kazakhstan. Okay. They're doing less trade with the United States in dollar, and they're doing more RMB with everybody else. And soon it'll be Saudi oil in RMB.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's how I square it away. I don't necessarily take the press report and say, oh gosh, Trump's stupid. No, I say Trump is clever. There's an ulterior motive. Let's figure it out.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not that easy to see and not that easy to figure out. Trump is working hand in hand with both President Xi and President Putin in executing the global currency reset. They're all being done with secret meetings. He had a secret meeting with President Xi a month ago. He had a secret meeting with Trump recently. Even when he has the open meetings with Trump, he goes aside and has a secret meeting right on Air Force One.
Yeah, I heard that too.
Okay, what is the topic? It's the global reset.
Yeah.
It's the move toward the gold standard. It's hastening the RMB trade. The RMB trade in trade payment is a caretaker, a transition toward the gold standard. And I think China's going to play a major role with the gold trade note coming out. I think they're going to provide the gold for the gold trade note. And they're going to hope that there's not too much gold payment at the end of the contract. Instead, there'd be a lot of bilateral trade. It'll net out to near zero or small amounts.
Jim, just one last question, and we'll begin to wrap up. I just feel compelled to go back to one of the topics we kind of touched on earlier. You know, I mean, people obviously need to visit TFMR. They need to go to goldenjackass.com and subscribe to the Hat Trick Letter so that they're educated and they're aware
of this process and what's coming. Because, Jim, just summarize again for everybody, what does a post-apocalyptic world look like? I mean, let's say all of this transition, some type of gold trade note you won, regional reserve currency, whatever, that's all put forth, let's say, and it's 2022. And this is now how the world operates. What's it look like? I mean, for the average guy who's, trying to feed his family, or the average gal in Canada who's trying to watch out for her parents and her kids and all that. I mean, what's the world look like? How is it different from what it is now?
There'll be more branches for the Bank of China and more branches for the ICBC.
But in terms of inflation and standard of living and that kind of stuff, taxes.
There'll be much less free money in the United States. You're talking about the United States, I assume.
Yeah, in Canada, yeah.
Yeah, okay. There'll be much less free money. There won't be your 4% mortgage money for a home. It'll be like 8 or 10. For a car loan, it won't be a rosy deal where you get cash back to reduce the cost on the cash outlay. In other words, forget about the no money down for a car purchase on a net basis. You're going to see a lot more Chinese banks. You're going to see more Singapore banks.
Yeah.
You're going to see more little companies where if you go behind the scene, you'll see a Chinese manager. You're going to have more jobs in the United States that are of a Chinese origin that don't have anywhere near the fringe benefits that were customary in the 80s and 90s, like what I saw, workman's compensation, pension contribution, real cheap health care. Forget all that.
Right. And to that end, wouldn't there be a dramatic decrease? I mean, I don't want to call it austerity, but anybody that's trying to, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, pension benefits to public employees, that kind of stuff, that almost has to all either get significantly trimmed back, or if it's just paid with created dollars now at this point, you have this massive reduction of standard of living, of inflation and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's a real conundrum in that regard too, right?
Well, absolutely. No question about it. We're going to see not so much price inflation as shortages.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
there's an old saying that when you have a currency crisis, you export everything that's not nailed down. Okay, now just take that in and put it in the Venezuela perspective. 2 years ago, not now, 2 years ago, there was a shortage of rice, beans, toilet paper, and condoms. 2 years ago, they exported everything that was not nailed down. In the United States, we're going to export food.
Yeah.
We're going to export paper products. We're going to export energy products.
Yeah. That makes
sense. The second part. And therefore, we're going to have heavy shortages of all the above.
And that's how you get the higher prices.
That's how you get some higher prices, but I think it's going to be a combination of higher prices, but then some managed supply. And, we just don't have tomatoes on Thursday, Friday anymore.
Yeah.
You want tomatoes? Come earlier in the week. And we have a good price. It's a stable price. That's what we're likely to see. This free money consequence is going to go away. There's going to be shortages of everything that's not nailed down that we produce.
Yeah.
Now, Trump has a plan, and I'm hearing about it from many different corners, all in secretive sources. He's got a plan to cover the debt. And, when you say, okay, let's just say he's got $12 trillion that he's scared up. I love that. I scared up $12 trillion. Let's suppose Trump scared up $12 trillion. And he says, I want to reduce the debt. Well, he could do one of two things. He could reduce the federal debt and buy back, say, treasury bonds held by pension funds. Or he could devote that money to offset the trade deficit for the year. It's $600 billion or more per year. If he's got $12 trillion, he could put a fund together to offset the trade deficit while maintaining the debt. Okay, it's either offset the deficit on a monthly, yearly basis, or cover some of the gargantuan debt that's accumulated over a generation. And by the way, it doubled under that so-called successful Obama administration.
Right.
And by the way, it doubled in that so-called successful Bush 2 administration. Okay, Trump has a missing piece. I only hear about him saying covering the debt. He never says we're going to offset the deficit. If he covers the debt in a significant way, we're still left with the trade deficit. And let me put it into perspective for you. Just nice round numbers. $1,300 per ounce gold price. If we cover our dollar with a huge amount of gold to make a gold-backed dollar, in the first year, we forfeit 13,000 tons of gold. Real easy math. $1,300 price, 13,000 tons of gold. That's what $600+ billion in trade deficit does. Then I hear the moron argument of, oh, gosh, Jim, that could be all fixed by doubling the gold price. Oh, really? Then in 2 years, we lose 13,000 tons of gold. It doesn't fix anything. The hemorrhage is there. If you've got a lethal hemorrhage coming from the temple or the neck, and you say, oh, good, doctor, nice work, it's only half as much. No, he's dead in twice the time. This is not complicated stuff. It's just tremendous financial and economic ignorance. And that's what I try to address in the Hat Trick Letter and on goldenjackass.com, and I hope people go there, but yeah. You know, Trump has his hands tied in two ways. He can't cover the deficit of $21 trillion, not easily. He tried to do some repatriation, but it's not that easy. What he has to do is find the stolen gold. But even the stolen gold is under $1 trillion from Fort Knox. And there are a lot of stories out now that we're going to have some 9/11 revelations, and Trump's going to come out there and put on the trumpets and announce that the World Trade Center was to steal by the cabal Fort Knox's gold that was moved from Fort Knox to New York City.
Well, that would be interesting.
That's one story out there.
That would dominate the headlines, I'd say, for a few days.
I think there's a lot of threats. The threats are that the elite are saying, if you have, you know, thousands of arrests and asset confiscations and 9/11 revelations, we're going to have 20 cities in the United States and Canada suffer from dirty nuke events. Yeah. And you can deal with that. So Trump is trying to do something extremely efficient, very careful, and extremely dangerous. He's trying to eliminate the middle level of the elite globalist banker cabal. Middle level, by having them flip, having them killed, having their assets confiscated. Those three methods. And I was told by The Voice that 2 years ago, this was a 2016 project, and this had nothing to do with Trump. Trump is mainly the figurehead of this movement. It's basically, I think, a Pentagon white hat project that began about 3 or 4 years ago. And might have happened simultaneously with the Ukraine war, because that had a lot of opposition inside Washington. So the middle level elites are getting thinned out so badly that you can't use the word thinned out. It's more like eliminated. They're using the internet, the Interpol fraud division of The Hague and Brussels, and they're using the triad hired killers from the Asian Hong Kong mafia. This is war. It's war to regain control of the planet and its monetary system.
Yeah.
Because with the monetary system will come control of the economic and political system.
And those are the changes that we're talking about, my friend. And we've been talking about it for years. And just because we've been talking about it and it hasn't happened yet doesn't mean that it's not happening. Doesn't mean that it's not coming, because it most certainly is.
Two or three years along, Craig.
As I mentioned, and as you mentioned, Jim, I just don't think there could be a more important time for people to educate themselves about what's going on. And if this all holds off 20 years, hey, fine. But there's no harm in learning about how these things work. And really, one of the best investments you can make in learning, educating yourself, broadening your horizons, whatever, is a hat trick letter. Like I said, Jim's been a friend of mine, been a friend of the site now for 7 or 8 years, and no time like the present, no time more important than now to subscribe. So Jim, just briefly as we wrap up, tell everybody where they can find your site, the two reports, all that kind of stuff, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. Let me just have a closing remark before getting to the website. That is, with this global reset that many major nations of the world are already signed on, is going to come a conversion of dollar-based assets. And I'm dead certain they're going to lose at least 30% of their value.
Yeah.
The Voice thinks it could be double that for certain asset types, like, say, mortgage bonds, because the value of a mortgage bond is dependent on the home prices, mm-hmm. and they may fall significantly, mm-hmm. again, because they have no right. There's no reason why a Vancouver regular house or a Toronto regular house or New York suburb regular house is selling for $1.25 million. No reason whatsoever. And you bring in a proper interest rate for the mortgage, and you're going to see the valuation drop just on a valuation versus debt basis. Okay, I'm talking about mutual funds in the United States stock market. I'm talking about pension funds and their values. Therefore, pensions are going to get knocked down. I'm happy to say I just had my fourth month for collecting Social Security.
You wily old dog.
I'm getting there. I'm getting on in years. It's a little long in the tooth. My joke is I'm not long in the tooth. I'm just missing several. If my Social Security in the year 2021 is equal to what it is now in nominal dollar amount, then, send me your dirty undershorts and I'll eat them, because it's just not going to happen.
Right.
Yeah. Not going to happen. Yeah. We're going to get, means testing. We're going to get, reduction. I think they're going to set up three classes of Social Security recipients. People who have been receiving it for more than, say, 4 years. Several classes. People who have been receiving it for under 4 years. People who are within 4 years of receiving theirs. And people who are more than 4 years from receiving theirs. And people who are more than 10 years from receiving theirs. That's five groups. They're all going to be treated differently. They're all going to have – the ones who are not receiving are going to have increased eligibility. It's not going to be 66. It'll be 68, whatever. Okay, big things are coming for changes. The Teamsters Central States Pension Fund, it's already seeing a 50% cutback in payouts. Nothing is working when it comes to pensions at either the corporate level or the municipal level, including California – and Chicago. They're all ridiculously bankrupt.
Right.
And in tremendous, what do they call it? Shortfall. Shortfall is a nice word for bankrupt. Okay. People had better wake up to the fact that asset based in paper, not say oil rights or the rights for the copper and zinc and gold in a mountain. Paper-based assets are going to take a major loss, mm-hmm. and people are not ready for it. They don't see it coming. It's not on the New York Times, not on CNN, not on the Washington Post. It's just not anywhere except in some select, I think, advanced, insightful websites like ours.
Like the hat trick letter.
GF Metals and Golden Jackass. We talk about it a lot. People had better sell high their assets now, based in paper, and buy low the gold and silver, especially silver, that are at suppressed and ridiculous prices that cannot even meet demand because they got ridiculous shortages. The de-dollarization movement is just a name for the conversion away from the dollar being the global reserve. I mean, if you look back at history, 300 years ago, it was the Portuguese currency.
Right.
You look 100 years ago, it was the British pound. And there was a seamless transition after World War II because the United States is basically a financial British colony. That conversion was seamless where the dollar took over as a global currency reserve. Now we're seeing another conversion. And if you look at history, it's every 70 to 80 years or so.
Yep. Yep.
What happened 70 years ago? World War II. And the dollar took over from the British pound. Now we're going to see a conversion to the gold standard, but with tremendous resistance, not with a world war, but with numerous regional wars, like what we're having now in Ukraine, Syria, Yemen. You could even see the South Sea Islands. That's a war zone.
Iran.
The Persian Gulf. It's a war zone. Okay, all these areas are war zones, and they all have a common theme, including the Gazprom pipeline. Mm-hmm. It's all the same theme. It's to prevent movement away from the dollar in commerce and economic development.
Yep.
So the hat trick letter is, I think, the solution for people to get up to speed or to increase their speed if they're already aware of many of these concepts. I get a lot of compliments, Craig, from people who are already on board this concept. They say, you know, you tie things together well.
Yep.
I wasn't aware of certain areas, and now I see how it's all integrated. You tie it together well. Okay, I love the compliments, and you know, while I'm at it, I mention the major compliments that I get. People say I was with your newsletter for a few years. I got out in 2016. I'm back. I wish I never left. Other one is I've listened for the last 3 years, your podcasts on interviews, including with John, and I thought that was enough, but I just out of curiosity, I signed up for your newsletter, and I wish I had long ago.
Right. I'm sure I get that, too.
You know, I'm getting these are nice things to hear, and I'm getting some different kinds of compliments lately, and I even had a guy say, I'm so grateful for what you're doing that I want to give you a gift. And I said, well, gosh, that's great. And I'm thinking, a guy wants to give me $100. Oh, no, it had four figures.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, that's just nice. And if someone out there wants to donate more to my cause, I mean, I'm all ears. All ears with an extended hand. You know, I'm not tin cupping here, but I'm pointing out that there's some very grateful clients out there.
Yes.
I once got a gift of a bunch of silver Eagle coins from a guy in Boston who said, Jim, you helped save my neck. I just sold my share of a business, and I cashed out for a couple million, and I'm going to give you a nice hefty gift. Again, four figures. I thought, that's tremendous, you know. You're now my main man for the next month.
Well, and again, it's that kind of thing that just underlies the value. And like we said, I mean, the stuff we've talked about over the last hour, I mean, this is important stuff. And people need to educate themselves. They may educate themselves and go, I'm not worried about it right now. But you've got to at least educate yourself. And again, one of the best ways you can do it is listening to Jim Willey and visiting goldenjackass.com and subscribing to the Hat Trick Letter. My friend, I'm sitting here thinking, when's our next holiday weekend? Is it all the way to Thanksgiving? Gosh, football season almost be over by then.
Yeah, there's Columbus Day, but I don't think that's very well celebrated. Let me mention one final thing that explains why we're making villains out of the Russians.
Sure.
Almost the entire New York Fed gold reserves was stolen Russian gold.
From
1913
right.
gave them 8 years from the 1905 Bolshevik Revolution where they killed Romanovs. They stole the Russian gold, moved a bunch of it to Paris, a bunch of it to London, and all of it, the majority, to New York City, and they started the Federal Reserve with stolen Russian gold. They want it back. Therefore, the United States, the fascists, the globalists, the narcos, the Clintons, Obamas, the big bankers, Wall Streeters, they want a war with Russia so they don't have to give them back their gold. Just start thinking more, people.
Yeah, there you go.
And stop watching that moronic tube of CNN. Stop reading that moronic rag of New York Times.
And Wall Street Journal, for that matter.
I bully New York Times, but Washington Post too now. And Wall Street Journal. There's several that are. Los Angeles Times is another rag.
Well, I tell you, my friend, we always get to this point, and I always wonder myself, geez, what is the world going to look like by the next time we do this? And it looks like, as I look at the calendar, it's going to be 90 days. Goodness gracious, won't that be a fun conversation? In the meantime, Jim, thanks. Again, from all of us here, it's just we all benefit from your work and your willingness to share it with us here. And at this point, I wish you a happy football season, a great holiday weekend, and I look forward to the next time we visit.
I think by Thanksgiving, there's a 50-50 chance or better that China's going to announce the gold trade note.
All right. Well,
And the Saudis are going to announce openly, along with the other Gulf Arab nations, acceptance of RMB for energy, primarily oil sales with China. That's what I think is going to be the big change agent between now and Thanksgiving.
I think we'll pick it up, and I'm going to mark that down. We're going to pick it up and start there when we next do this. My friend, thank you so much, and I think we'll call it a day. Have a great weekend.
Okay, very good. Thanks for everything.
And from all of us here to all of you out there, thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again soon.